Worst we get. I gotta get like a real. Everybody's dancing, by the way. Confetti's coming down. Mm. Welcome to our bonus episode.
Yes, the bonus episode of Worst We Get, the one you motherfuckers pay for. Welcome back. Thanks for money.
Yeah, thank you for paying to hear our dumb asses.
Yeah, you're so kind.
We bring smart people on. Mm-hmm. And then people are like, oh, wow, you guys are this great podcast. I'm like, yeah, we get awesome guests. We're idiots, but, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that person that called? Oh, Maria, but why don't you introduce our guests?
Oh, okay. Our guests are first person in studio, returning guest, G. Ryan Gaines.
Hey, what up,
boom.
What up?
It's our union, dude.
Awesome to be here in person. Mm-hmm. First time I was on the show was via Zoom, but this is way more troll.
Yes, dude.
Way more. Yes.
And then we got
not to say how much better it is to be here in person other than in Zoom before bringing on our Zoom guest.
No, but look, she can't smell you guys like I can smell you guys. Like I get the full effect.
You are fortunate.
You get the full effect of smelling my house that reeks of pot.
It's beautiful.
Yes. And then we have my other friend, Miranda, coming in from Connecticut. What's up?
I guess this is like how you try people out, right? It's like a kiddie pool of like, can you not pee in the water with us? And then we get to come over your house.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait. Plus, were we not supposed to pee in the pool?
I was going to say, this is a pee in the pool couch. You're safe here.
I'm really glad we covered this. I'm in.
Yes.
In fact, you're required to pee in the pool at this house. We ran out of water, so we need more pee. Yeah.
Miranda, will you want to introduce yourself and tell everybody how we met?
Yeah, so I'm a survivor of the troubled teen industry, and so I also do a podcast. We have a nonprofit, and Maria and I met on Twitter, you know, dealing with specifically, I think, probably the Justice for Cornelius campaign.
Yep.
But I'm also a fan of the show, y'all. I, like, binge listened to you on a cross-country road trip last month from Texas to Florida, so... Thanks for that. I should start paying, I guess.
I was just thinking to myself, I should probably start paying too if I'm sitting on the couch.
We have a variety of guests on so that we can try and get our Patreon numbers up.
I'm not even going to be able to listen to this episode.
And the thing is that it makes me feel so weird. I'm like, oh yeah, people, you know. But I guess that, we appreciate all of our sponsors.
So... Maria, this week for our bonus episode, you told me that you wanted to bring Miranda on and talk to me about something that is near and dear to both of your hearts, which is the juvenile justice and specifically the troubled teen industry.
Yep, Miranda, take the floor.
Wait, what? Well, I was just gonna say. Now this is a subject I am sympathetic to, but know nothing about. So what I did was, I watched a documentary recommended to me by the two yins. It's called The Last Stop. It's available free on Amazon, I think.
And YouTube.
Listeners, this is not Flavor of Love where you can just hear us joke about it. You should probably watch this, before we talk about it, I would imagine, because there's a lot in here that you probably didn't know, because I didn't know a lot of this stuff, and it's pretty fucked up. So, Miranda, why don't you tell us a little... So you are a survivor of the troubled teen industry, is that correct?
It's the easiest way to put it, where Google explains what that means.
Okay. Would you like to, or be comfortable explaining it more?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, so, I mean, I like to put everything in a bigger picture. I think Maria and I are kind of on the same page when it comes to looking at systemic issues. So through colonization, when they go into countries, you have assimilation, which often includes institutionalizing youth in order to brainwash and deprogram their connection to their local culture and then program them with Western colonial ideas. And so in the United States and Canada and Ireland, I'm sure you have a lot of Irish Americans listening to your podcast. This was standard practice. And then basically what it meant was that up until 1996 earliest, the United States government and Canada could go into Indigenous communities, legally mass abduct children and put them into residential boarding schools, usually run by the Catholic Church, sometimes run by the state. And the idea was to educate them, but it's assimilation. So, you know, they cut their hair, gave them numbers, abused them in every possible way. So I would definitely recommend people, my personal hero, Thunder Child, she is Mi'kma'ki in Prince Edward Island. She's on YouTube, and she talks about how the nuns would dress the girls up for the priests to sexually assault. And then if they had babies, throw them alive into the furnaces, you know, or mass graves. And this was like incredibly common. We're talking like millions of kids. They're unearthing the mass graves in Canada. And we've been promised in the U.S. they'll be doing this as well. And so this was like a lot of money. And this went on for over a century. And then it kind of became an open invitation, you know, where they accepted not just Indigenous kids. And then when it was illegal in the 90s, they continued to funnel Indigenous kids into these residential youth boarding school therapeutic programs, but they're just kind of open. And those came about like based on America's Most Dangerous Cult, Synanon, created Tough Love, and that was in the 1940s. And they've been bringing youth, like on right now, hundreds of thousands of American kids are in these programs, and they're not regulated. There are no laws to protect them. And most of them that go in, they age out at 18 if they survive.
Yo, I'm sorry, I don't want to interject, but my dad actually went to one of those unearthings of a mass graves for First Nations people up in Canada. And he was telling me about it because, like, so just a little brief backstory. My dad is a deacon in the Catholic Church, and he didn't believe it. Like, he heard, like, what was going on and what had happened in the U.S. and Canada. In terms of like the indoctrination of Native American folks, and like there's a fair amount of Native American in my family too, so he, you know, wanted to kind of connect those dots and tell the truth, whatever the truth may be, however ugly it was. And so he went to I can't remember, somewhere in Ottawa, but it was a location of a former like education center where they basically took First Nations citizens, you know, women and children, boys and girls, and like you said, would like literally indoctrinate them. And if they didn't assimilate, like they would beat them, you know, they would put them in confinement. And, you know, when they would get sick and they would die, they would literally just bury them one on top of another.
Andrew?
Sorry.
No. I mean, yeah, we knew this was going to be a fucking rough one.
I'm just, I'm listening a lot because the documentary you told me to watch is not really about what you guys are talking about at all. I mean, it's like along
I'll
the same lines.
The
yeah.
Yeah, Miranda will connect the dots.
The movie that we're taught, like this specific movie that you watched is called The Last Stop, and it's about the Elon School in Maine. And that program, for the record, the Indigenous kids from Connecticut and a bunch of New England schools were funneled into until the late 90s and until they closed. But Elon is one of the Synanon Tough Love schools. So that's the connection. So as they became more modern, you're not just going to see, you know, Indigenous kids in those schools. You're going to see everybody in the 90s and the 2000 era and now as well. Although there are 76 residential schools that were started in the United States for Indigenous kids that still have a majority of Indigenous kids today that are still open, that were founded exactly under these principles where there are mass graves. And, you know, that's still something that's happening. So this isn't the past. What's the past on this is that in the past, it was required and everybody was abducted and assimilated. And like Alcatraz, everybody's heard of that prison. So if the Indigenous parents fought back, they were mass imprisoned there. But, you know, Elon's more modern.
Right. And Elon, because Elon used a lot of the Synanon techniques. And while all these residential schools were happening, you started to see this big push in training schools when it came to court active kids, right?
Okay.
Which you would see, again, kids of color, you know what I mean, Black children being like assimilated into the juvenile justice and child welfare and into these programs, right? Mm-hmm. So then it literally, like, they all came together, and it's basically overall the troubled teen industry. Elon was one of the most famous.
Okay, yeah. So, I guess what you guys are describing is like the bigger picture. The documentary I watched is just like a portion of that, a piece of the larger story. So that's why I'm just like a little like, oh, okay, I'm not prepared for this conversation. Like I've heard,
oh, I'm sorry,
I've heard about a lot of these residential schools. I've heard about these mass graves. Well, it's terrible, but yeah, I don't know.
So enough about what were your thoughts about the documentary?
The documentary was. Like, I mean, just the story of the Elon school, it's pretty intense because like the first, the documentary is like an hour and 50 minutes long. And like the first hour and 30 minutes, hour and 20 minutes or so, like the majority of the documentary up until close to the end, they're telling about all these horrible, horrible things that happened in these school, all these, you know, generations of people that have like had their childhoods taken away, have had this tough love approach to, quote unquote rehabilitation. You know, you see all these kids that like some of them fell in, got in trouble and ended up there. Like there was the one girl that just like her mother was an alcoholic. So like she wasn't a troublemaker, but then she like got into the system. Like she was saying like, I'd never touched a drug before I got put into the, like these group homes. And then it all spun out from there. And then she ended up at the Elon school. So like it's all these horrible things, but then like close to the end of the documentary, they like it seems like they like almost switched their focus, and they were showing like a lot of people that were saying how good the school was for them or how much it did help them. And then I was very conflicted watching this. They had on the one woman who was a counselor there, and then all of the people that had been talking about how bad the school was were like, oh yeah, but she was great. And like, I'm like, what the fuck? It was very, the way this documentary, like it didn't entirely switch focus, but it like, it really like I said, like three quarters of the way in just like softened its stance or something, or like only added the nuanced part after it was like showed you all the atrocities of it. And that just as far as documentaries go, is like a weird thing for it to like not seem nuanced at all from the beginning. And you watch most of the documentary, and it's like, this is full on bad, unequivocally. That's probably not the right word. And then just for like the last 20 minutes, half an hour, to be like, but a lot of people like say that they wouldn't be where they are without it. It's so fucking weird.
It's very strange. I mean, I know, you know, Randy, you could talk more on this. I've worked with a couple people. I mean, kids that I've worked with that have been institutionalized, I mean, they become used to it. It's almost like they will find a way to rationalize things that have happened, like in placements and things like that. I mean, they do that to rationalize their trauma. That's what I kind of try to help kids that are ready to do that, like trauma narrative piece of like dealing with these like beliefs like that are not true. Like, you were a child. This shouldn't have happened to you. You shouldn't have been abused at a residential home. You know what I mean? Like the, you know, the screaming sessions, children taking care of children, and what that, you know, these issues would cause. But Miranda, I mean, you're a survivor of this.
Yeah. So I'll address the positive perspective of staff in the abusive behavior modification program. So I have a lot of friends who went to Elon over the decades. And definitely check out Joe versus Elon online. It's a free graphic novel about it that I think is excellent. And as far as documentaries, because I'm a documentarian and we've been working on one for a year on the industry with a series, I totally feel you, Andrew. I think that there's a lot of critique I could give to the editorial style, the way it was told. I think what he was trying to do, but I don't think it should have been at the end. I think it maybe should have been in the beginning show the horror, right?
Because like for three quarters, it was like, this is objectively a bad thing. There's no good. Like, this is an evil. And then just for that last quarter of the documentary to be like, but kind of it's worked for some, like that. It was just weird the way that they placed that. And I felt like I said, like if I would have stopped the documentary three quarters through, I would have came here and been like, I mean, I'm still saying overall, it seems pretty fucked up and terrible, and that it traumatized a lot of people. I'm not like saying like, oh, it's not that bad, but like it is weird to like add that layer of nuance at that point in the documentary.
What was the positive like takeaway at that point? Because I didn't see the documentary, full disclosure.
Well, they had a staff member that, like Andrew had said, that they interview in the documentary. And then everybody they interviewed was like, yeah, she was really great. We loved her. And that's what Andrew was saying. And that's pretty much the gist. But the psychology, which I don't think was in any way explained, was that and I hate Stockholm syndrome. I think it's an incredibly lazy way to put it. But a lot of these kids, remember, their prefrontal cortexes aren't developed. Mm-hmm. And some adults are going to be abusing them more than others. And right, the girl who gives you a granola bar when you're being deliberately starved is your savior. A lot of us have hero staffers from our programs who also, for the record, abuse other people. And I think that's kind of what they were trying to show. And something that we do need to combat, and I'm so glad you brought this up, Andrew, because like, I've never had this conversation with someone who's not a survivor who's watched this movie. So I thank you. But I guess the other perspective is so many people will say the program saved my life, because during this period of a traumatized child who was probably abused in some way at home for years, probably already had complex post-traumatic stress, and then be put in this dystopic nightmare where their brain literally explodes, is the like, I can't believe that this happened to me and I was abused, because what does it say about the world around me? Like, this was my big thing in EMDR with my therapist, with like blaming myself for making my parents like beat me. Yeah. You know, like getting my alcoholic dad with PTSD to like beat my ass was my bad, right? Because like, I should have known better. And like the program, it's like, maybe I was a troubled kid. That's why our podcast is called Troubled. In other words, what does it say about the world? It's that it's incredibly dangerous and there's nothing you can do to protect yourself.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the thing that really bothers me is the whole kids taking care of the other kids. You know what I mean? Because you're teaching these other kids to abuse. You know what I mean? Because it's like, and I don't know if this happened, because the placement that you were in, Miranda, was like, it was almost like a cult. Like, yours was a religious cult. Like, it was one of those.
We were affiliated with Elan. Like, we sent people to Elan, and people from Elan came to us. We were both just in and on cults. But ours did have a chapel, and okay, we were forced to go to chapel once or twice a day.
Okay, yeah.
But the program was the same as Elan.
Okay.
Was it Catholic?
Tough love. No, it wasn't. It was non-denominational and also offered like additional service options for Jewish kids, because got to get that Jewish money in New York. You know, you're not going to miss that, right?
Right, right, right. Yep.
Got to have to cook it and all that jazz.
Get that Crown Heights money.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that was, it's, and this made it, I mean, and I saw this like in our system now. I mean, now it's very hard to place kids like within the system, because everybody is focusing on keeping the child in the family, which I fully agree with. I think that residential needs to be limited. It needs, and if you're going to do it, it needs to be quick, it needs to be fast, and it needs to be like a facility that is, like, these facilities need federally regulated. It should not be up to the states. But these, like, facilities, like, you could send, like, the courts would send you to Elon, but then you would have parents that could pay ridiculous amounts of money. And they would, like these people would fucking, like, fuck with the parents and be like, listen, your kid is going to either end up dead or in jail or this or that. And they talk these parents into like fucking paying like $5,000 a month, because they're in this belief that their kid is going to be getting like this help. And they go to these fucking spots and it's behavior modification. They're being fucking abused. They're being left in solitary for like 3 to 5 days.
Jesus Christ.
They're being like, you know, basically like they have these things in there. It's called like scream sessions, where kids will scream.
It's called a general meeting.
Yeah, the general.
That's what they call it. But it's like one kid like sits there and the entire rest of the camp or what, all the other kids literally just scream at them and belittle them and berate them. And it's like, yeah, this is probably causing a little more trauma than it's fixing.
Like, oh, yo, that's just what it feels like to be a parent, yo.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah, why do you think I'm always calling you to bring the ice cream truck through, man? I'm sick of getting ripped on by my 5-year-old.
I mean, yeah, but they would like, they'll also severely limit like who you can talk to. So like when you go into the program, you're not allowed to talk to like people that are on different levels than you or things like that.
So they kept them sequestered, like almost in like grades then? Like
yeah, it was like level systems. Like, and there's all types of like level systems within facilities, right? Because you have to try to get like, which I'm going to tell you what, like kids can get around level systems so hard. Like people are like, oh, I don't understand why, you know, certain kids turn into sociopaths. Like, and I'm like, because they're not getting real treatment. Behavior modification isn't going to fucking really work.
Dude, so I knew how to skip like the first three levels on Super Mario Bros. Before I could even read or write, dude.
Oh, yo.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. You have to have some
I'm trying here.
I mean, it's hard. I know. It's fucking depressing. But you have to have some type of level system, like, in those placements, right, for the kids to work through. But, like, they would, you know, the kids were allowed to fucking talk to each other at the placements that I worked at. You know what I mean? Like, there'd be a kid on fucking safety or whatever because he tried to fucking run. But we didn't, like, tell him that he couldn't, like, talk to the level three kid that, like, had all the fucking, you know, thing. Privileges, but they would severely limit, and then they would also too, which you cannot legally do, they would like limit their phone calls, they would limit like their mail, they would read their mail, like they did all types of fucking wild shit to these fucking kids. Wild shit.
Can I ask you guys
they
something?
Do it now. So yeah. Just to clarify, this is all currently happening, and the thing that makes a youth residential program part of the TTI is that it's from the Tough Love Synanon model. So when Maria's talking about like kids taking care of other kids, you guys are talking about the screaming, that's specifically attack therapy. It was designed by Chucky D in Synanon, which was closed by the government in the 90s as America's most dangerous cult. Yet somehow Tough Love, the parent organization that they created to help parents, is still running in the U.S. and is still recommended to parents whose children are in crises, in psych wards, or coming through the JJ system or foster care. And per foster care, that's the largest financial and like population funnel into the TTI today. But yeah, attack therapy, I don't know how much you can swear, how much you want to traumatize your audience, but it includes specifically a bunch of people all at once screaming at a child to tell them that they're going to die a horrible death, usually by being raped, on drugs, on the street. And these are children often who've never done any drugs, who are virgins, 11, 12-year-old children. Mine was like, you're a dirty, worthless cunt, and nobody loves you. Your parents don't even love you. And if you don't take your first step and get with the program, you're going to die gang-raped on the street like the dirty whore that you are.
Yo,
and that's the closest thing you'll ever have to love. And we're kids, and everybody's watching it, and they have to join in and chant at you, and right? And that's like real life in America right now.
And there are adults that are sitting there watching this happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is led by adults. And if you don't get with the program and yell at the other kids or call out the other kids enough, they turn it on you. They'll be like, Miranda, why don't you get up there then if you don't have anything to say to Sally about what a little whore she is, yeah, and why she made her daddy rape her. And that's why she can't go home because her stepmom doesn't trust her around her dad.
Yo, do any of these kids ever buck back? Like, do any of them ever just be like, you know what? Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. You're cool.
They kill them. They will restrain them sometimes to death. Like, they literally killed Cornelius for throwing a sandwich at another kid in jest. I watched a kid die in my program. It's incredibly common. They just beat them, put them in isolation. If they beat them too bad and don't get the medical attention quick enough, they die.
Oh, yeah. You should see when the wilderness programs, which was a whole other part of the troubled teen industry. There was a kid, Aaron Bacon, that they took him out. They would take these kids out in the wilderness and just give them fucking a bunch of things and be like, here, you got to survive. And they would take them on these grueling hikes, and he kept complaining about his stomach ache, and they kept calling him like a pussy. And no, you're just holding up the group, and you're not getting with the program. He ended up dying because he had like septus from an ulcer.
Oh,
they
shit.
Did not believe him, like, and he was shitting his pants. Like, he was like, and they were just humiliating him the entire time that this kid is dealing with this. And the thing is like, their facilities, like the facilities I've worked in, have not been that severe. I mean, ours, the ones I worked in, were state regulated and stuff like that. But institutionalization in itself is not good for children. It's just not. And the thing is that kids get into groupthink, right? So, like, I would see, like, in my programs, like, kids would tell war stories. You know, like, well, yeah, I hear and see things. So then all of a sudden you got two, three fucking kids that are hallucinating, you know what I mean? Or I did this, and it creates this groupthink. And then I guess, you know, in the Synanon programs, it was almost like kids would lie to get out, because it was like you were targeted if you didn't have anything to say in these attack groups. And so these kids would start making up these fucking wild fucking like things about themselves, like just to get the heat off of them. And again, people, millions of dollars for this. And I don't think they've ever passed that act that they tried. Yeah, they've never passed that act that they've put on the Senate floor, I think, twice in 2008. I forget what it's H.R. 620.
That detail's not important. The act that Maria is talking about is to kind of like get a hold of this industry and like either limit it or beat it back or maybe eliminate it. I don't know how far they're willing to go, but essentially to get some fucking control, because again, these places are still operating and still like very poorly regulated. The center in the Elon school, the one that was the focus of the documentary I watched, they had been investigated for abuse like 20 some times by the state of Maine, where it was located, and passed the inspection every single time. While there are literally, one of the programs that they did there was if a student got violent, they would literally have a fucking boxing match where the kids just beat the fuck out of each other.
Oh, I have seen one of those. Yeah.
And like the kid that was violent or that broke the rule, if he won the fight, they would just keep throwing more kids at him until he just got overwhelmed. Like they would have kid after kid go in and fight this, like who, like just in front. And this passed inspection dozens of times. And it finally took one. At one point, New York State sent somebody in to do like one of the investigations or checkups for it to fail, because I guess every time Maine investigated it, or like did their regularly scheduled check, or like they would tell them that they were coming, so they would just like chill out for the couple hours while the investigators were there. Yeah. Inspectors.
And that's the thing, is that residentials do not like when just random people show up, random providers show up. Like, it's funny because like I used to like show up to like fucking random residentials when we were using them a lot, and you would start to see like people, staff that I would see, like start putting shit away and start, you know what I mean, because it was just like, and here's the thing, like the state also does not, like they don't give a fuck, like even the residentials that are there that are like trauma informed or whatever, that are run, you know what I mean, that they're trying to run right, they're so like under like funded, they go through like, you go through staff like fucking crazy, but like these troubled teen industry places are just like straight barbaric, you know. And Elon, yeah, I don't, when did Elon officially close?
2011.
It was 2011.
Yeah, and it wasn't
April
because
Fool's Day.
Yeah, it wasn't even just because of that failed inspection. They also had like money troubles or something, because at some point somebody fucking posted on Reddit about the Elon school and it like blew up and went super viral, and so people, now that parents could Google it, they stopped sending their kids there.
Yeah.
But the industry survives just fine with the, other than that, I guess Elon school just got unlucky that the right person posted on Reddit about that school specifically. I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Ryan, I wanted to go back to the question that you asked, and actually try to answer it by asking Miranda another question. So Ryan had asked if any of the kids ever like bucked up and said, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. And what I got from the documentary, and I hope you can tell me if this is something that is accurate or not, it seemed like, although the schools were not, or these fucking facilities were not successful in fixing people, it did appear that they were very successful in rapidly breaking people. And like, I know that it's like, you know, that kind of behavior is very trauma informed. Like these kids that are participating and screaming at each other, you know, it's not necessarily their fault. Like they're in this situation, but it seemed like because of the intensity of it, that it didn't take long once a person got there to like be, to get broken by it and to not have that like stick up for myself thing. Like the one girl they showed, she like her first day, she like somebody said something or did something rude and she started crying. And in the whole fucking room, everybody surrounded her and yelled at her for crying. Like that kind of shit. It seems like it will fucking, this isn't like somebody like one person. It just seems like they break the kids really quick. Could you speak to like that? They're very successful in breaking that like wildness or whatever, that the desire to talk back. Am I far off on that?
No, spinning on Chucky Diedrich's design, Tough Love, based on a number of things, including North Korean brainwashing techniques and the same kind of social psychology that you see in like the Stanford Prison Experiment. Mm-hmm. And because it uses the, I thought you said something.
You're fine.
But because it uses like the entire herd mentality, it's a lot quicker, because this is like, when you watch The Handmaid's Tale or something like this, when you put a normal human brain in an environment where everybody agrees that the sky is purple, you know, you have to decide, am I crazy or is the world broken? And there's a very specific, most of the Tough Love programs, there's a specific rotation of initial sanctions that they put on you. Maria spoke to isolation. So when you get in any of these programs, when you first get there, there's a certain level of you can't speak to anyone who hasn't been there over 6 months. And then if you seem hard to break to first step, because they use AA, because, you know, that's where Oxford Group, all that jazz, they will put you on starvation, lack of sleep, work sanction, which is forced manual labor for like 12 hours or 16 hours a day, and things of that nature. And so, like, for example, for me, I didn't even believe I ever broke, but when I stopped fighting back is when I thought I was really smart. I was like an Amnesty International state trained rep for my school before I went there. And I was like, I have human rights and I'm going to show them I know it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm Irish American. I went on a starvation strike and, you know, it was some tuna, like 2 ounces of tuna, but they save it every meal for you. And so like a week or so later when they, you know, called my bluff and they were like, we're just going to hook you up to an IV right here. And I was like passing out. I had to eat this like week old nasty globs of tuna and this one piece of lettuce. So I obviously, trigger warning, vomited. And in most of these programs, if you throw up, you eat it. And so that consisted of 30 some odd children and 10 adults getting around me. Yeah. And chanting at me like, fucking eat it, you dumb whore. Like, for a prolonged period of time. And so like quite literally, I sat there at 17 years old and rolled my vomit and tuna up into lettuce and like water fluffed it down. And for me, as a 35-year-old woman now, the biggest problem I have with that, because usually when I tell that story, I, like, giggle through it. Like, it's one of my trauma giggles, is, like, I'm heartbroken that I believe these people that they wouldn't take me to the hospital. Because, like, that was my one shot at being able to access the police, was to get myself to a hospital. And I, as a 35-year-old woman, am still trying to be, like, I was just a teenager. Like, it's okay that I caved and ate the tuna in my vomit. But really, I'm like, we could have saved ourselves. We could have saved some, you know, people. Tom Malkowski died after that. Like I could have saved myself and those kids, and I didn't. And, you know, and so we do that to ourselves. Like, we focus our trauma on, I can't believe I, like, gave up on my hunger strike, and I can't believe that I didn't hold this boy's hand while he choked on his blood in front of me or off the balcony at breakfast, you know, instead of being like, let me figure out a way to get justice and stop these predators from hurting other kids.
They break the kid's brain down so much.
Dude, that story just broke my brain.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane.
I mean, we knew that
And so when you see that all the time, you know.
What did your parents, like, okay, so you get out and, like, you're telling, like, your friends and your loved ones about that. What do they say when when you tell these stories?
You don't tell them. You get out and you say you went to a boarding school, like, in the mountains, and you don't talk about it, and you try to move forward for 10, 20 years until you wind up, like, homeless.
It seemed like a lot of the people that were in the documentary, like, kind of compartmentalized what happened to them for years and years. And then, like, they were then in their, like, mid-30s and their entire lives were falling apart and they didn't even know why. Yeah. It's like, oh, because you had, like, the most fucked up traumatic experience that could even be imagined for years of your life. And, like, and I could understand, like, living through that. I imagine that it's way easier to, it feels way easier 6 months after you get out of that program to not talk about it at all. But like, that shit's still in there. That shit's still in your head. You're just like trying not to talk about it because like for a variety of reasons. And so you're just like living with fucking, there's an elephant in the room, except the room is your skull.
Well, you keep bringing up that specific girl who was taken away because she went into foster care. And you remember she died by the end of filming because she hadn't had, and they didn't have a therapist with this film. And they brought up all this trauma, and she remembered being abused in ways she didn't remember. And so she was dead within a couple months because that's, you know, and that's why as a documentarian, I'm like, if you're going to come into traumatized communities and bring up like potentially blocked memories, like you really need to be serious.
Yo, thank God about- you're the one that's doing this work right now as a documentarian, because that's a really, really, really good point. And that's something that like, like full disclosure, like I work as a filmmaker for the United Steelworkers, and like I wouldn't have even thought of that angle, you know. And you don't think about like the trauma that might come back up just by having somebody tell a 20-year-old story.
Yeah, and I saw that whenever it popped up that she had passed away, and it didn't say like what happened, and like I wanted to explore that deeper, but then they like. It seemed like they almost tried to like bury that a little bit. But I thought maybe they were just doing that to like, you know, maybe if, because she said that she had been using drugs steadily since or off and on
like
since.
Off and on.
So at the time, like, I thought like, oh, maybe they just wanted to like not like put her shit out there that she maybe overdosed or something. But like, I didn't even think about the toll that reliving that trauma might have in regards to making that documentary itself. Like, again, I've got a few issues for these filmmakers here. I don't know, dude. It just seems like
it's like a very, it's a subject that is very intense and very it's like you have to be careful with how you do things. I mean, I think even with like myself as like a clinician and somebody that, you know, wants to, you know, continue to do activism in this, like I even, you know, look to the survivors as to like, what do I say, where do I, you know what I mean, because it is, it's their story, but you also have to, it's a very sensitive subject, and you have to, the people that are telling the story, like you have to protect them, you have to protect their brain. I mean, I'm like this big believer in like the body keeps score, and this shit will fuck with you. It's fucked up, so you have to be very careful in how you, you know, tell these stories. And it sucks because it continues to happen today. But I do think that, like, there are more people, like, speaking out about these things, you know? And my hope would be, like, that people start to really, really look at this. I mean, we have severely limited using, like, institutionalization and residentials and stuff around, I know, at least in Pennsylvania. But, like, they're also still taking resources. They're not like replacing it with other resources, you know. Mm-hmm. Like these things need to be trauma informed. Kids are they're like sponges, and you cannot do this stuff to kids, and to place them in an institution, especially if they haven't fucking done anything. I mean, it could create this lasting damage for a lifetime. I mean, I worked with, years ago, I worked with a family where the grandmother was a survivor of one of these placements. And I couldn't get her, like, look at, like, the relational pattern of, like, you do understand that your strictness, your coldness is coming from your trauma of, like, because in her head, she had been so brainwashed to believe that, no, that program saved my life, and I worked for that program, and that was the pro, you know what I mean, but it was affecting her parenting, which was in turn affecting her child, and then it was this center to placement. Like, it just creates this like vicious cycle. So like Miranda and I really wanted, we're gonna try to do more podcast work and crossovers and talk about like the issues of like today, because these things are still happening. Like Cornelius Fredrick, his what birthday is when? The 18th?
It was Friday. So Cornelius would have turned 18 and gotten out of Lakeside and out of foster care on Friday.
Yep.
But yeah, there's daily freaking updates in this industry, because especially since COVID, there are mass runaways and breakouts.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And these kids don't get access to the real news or the real information. And since it's a fear-based model, can you imagine, like, being in some like lockdown isolated environment, what they're telling them about what's going on in the outside world? And so you have these groups of kids plan mass escapes, and there have been a lot of kids dying, getting hit by cars, breaking legs, and getting hypothermia in rivers.
Yeah, because even the ones that are regulated, like they can't have home visits because of COVID, so they're going fucking nuts.
And the industry, like, ownership has changed recently. So you've got the same people who started and ran places like Elan, or really like Elan and those things, who now own state-regulated facilities, because companies like Bain Capital will buy entire networks of programs, you know? And so it's, you know,
capitalism usually makes things better, though, right? The free market.
Shout out to Mitt Romney, Bain Capital.
Yeah, right?
Coming the pot.
Shout out to Mitt Romney, the real villain of The Dark Knight Rises.
Shout out to his alter ego, Pierre. What was it? Pierre Delecto?
No, that was what Anthony Weiner.
No. That was Mitt Romney. Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking of Carlos Danger. My bad.
No, that was Anthony Weiner. Yep, that was
Danger.
Anthony Weiner. Mike Vick, Ron Mexico, Carlos Danger, and then
Pierre something. Yeah,
something.
Mitt Romney, come on the pod.
Yeah,
we're
explain
beat
Pierre.
The shit out of you. But yeah, but like I think that like what we kind of want to try to do is like call these places out like early, before any more kids get hurt. Before any more kids have to like suffer through this shit. And I get it, resource, but we have to figure out ways.
Well, I'm going to propose something that I usually avoid.
What's that?
Based off of what I learned from watching this documentary, the way that you defeat the troubled teen industry is literally by posting.
Okay.
Elan School was shut down because somebody made a compelling
Reddit
post.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a big fan of saying that posting isn't doing anything, but in this specific instance, it seems like it has. And I think that because, like, it makes a lot of sense that these schools, these fucking facilities, could kind of got away with everything they wanted to do for the last century, because when you heard about them, you probably saw a pamphlet somewhere, or like maybe like somebody like maybe through your church, like they probably got like your fucking pastor probably gets a cut of the proceeds for every new recruit. I know judges get paid for putting people into these facilities.
Pennsylvania. Yeah, yeah. Kids for cash.
So my thing is that like up until 10, 15 years ago, these places did whatever the fuck they wanted, and there was nothing anybody could do about it. Cause like, what are you going to do after you get out? You're going to bury that shit down. Most people are going to try not to ever think about it again. But nowadays, like, parents aren't asking their preacher, they're not asking the judge, they're fucking Googling.
Yep.
What do I do with my kid? And so, like, this is not just we should make a post. I'm saying, like, this is, I think the only way that these kind of things can be taken down is to, like, get this fucking information out there. Like, the first Google result for any of these facilities, when a parent can't deal with their kid, the first Google result needs to be, this will fuck your kid up more, you asshole. Like,
and to your point, like, if it is, like, a Reddit thread or a viral tweet, it will hit the front page of Google.
Mm-hmm.
Like, real easy. Can I ask you guys something? Like, okay, so in the smartphone era, so we're talking, like, from, like, 2008, 2009 on, has anyone been able to like sneak footage out of any of these places, or like the sessions where like they're like ripping on the kids and like cutting them down and stuff like that? Nobody's been able to.
Well,
like,
I mean, they did in the 80s. You can look up like old, like if you look up like Straight Incorporated or like Kids Helping Kids, like there are like you know, like CBS and all those spots, like they would talk about like these spots where like this is saving lives, like because it was the whole drug addiction. You know what I mean?
There,
like
there were a few clips in the documentary that were just footage of this, but it was older stuff. And it's obviously they're not going to show you them beating each other up or like kids knocking each other. Sure. They had some clips, but I didn't, there was nothing like leaked footage from the smartphone era in the documentary.
And a lot of times they would tell the parents like, hey, you're going to get letters from your kids that say how horrible and terrible this is. Don't listen to them, you know? And it was also like the mail was regulated and it was, so it's very difficult to,
get information.
Yeah. Get any information or access to it. So
but to answer question with like a specific example, and if anybody's listening who works at one of these programs, please send me footage, talktrouble.org. I would love it. So the last footage we got from inside a program was a 30-second clip, although there's more. We just needed the 30-second clip from In Circle of Hope Girls Ranch in Missouri, and we were able to take that clip, do a podcast episode, and then go on all the different survivor podcasts. Because there are many, there's the Timeout Room, Pieces of Victory, there's a bunch of them, and go on TikTok and then eventually get an NBC article in Dateline. But we were able to close Circle of Hope Girls Ranch because of 30 seconds of footage. And even though the local police didn't care about that footage, we were able, once we got that footage in Dateline and in the media, able to get legislators, actually pre-Dateline, forget it, but legislators to help us write a new law, which was just signed by the governor in Missouri a couple weeks ago, which now pulls religious institutions under state inspection and regulation, because there are multiple states where if I say it's a religious school for girls, I can have as many kids in my basement as I want. And even in this specific example, when they have been found guilty of sex trafficking years earlier, the state can't do anything because they're not registered in any way with the state. So we're going to go state to state and repeat those regulations and try to open statutes of limitations, and we'll have to deal with it that way. But send us those 20-second clips, because all we needed was showing this guy be like, knock her out. If she rolls her fist at you, knock her out. And again, the cops are all complicit. It goes all the way up to the state often. But if you get on social media, Andrew, you're right. Social media is what got three people charged for Cornelius, even though that's not enough, even though they're dropping the charges. But you're right, posting.
Yeah. Because, Cornelius, like that video, I mean, you watch.
There's
him
a video.
Die.
Can you? Okay, so you've been mentioning this Cornelius person. Okay, so you've been mentioning. Can you please tell me what happened?
He was a foster
kid.
We are doing
the end of the groundwork for the story at the end of the story. We are also terrible documentarians.
Sorry.
Set up for the prequel.
Yeah. Cornelius Frederick was a kid that he was in a placement, Lakeside, with Lakeside Youth Services, and they're under this bigger company called Sequel Youth Services, right?
Mm-hmm. Which was founded by Bain executives.
Yes. So remember when I told you when I was going out of Miami and I was going to try to fuck with one of the fucking facilities? That was under Sequel Youth Services, okay?
Okay.
So this one in particular was Lakeside Academy. It was in Michigan. Cornelius was what? He was a kid who was in foster care. They couldn't find a placement for him, so he was basically like just languishing in this fucking residential place. He threw a sandwich in the cafeteria and was calm after he threw the sandwich. They restrained him. It was three people that restrained him. They had him on the ground for, what was it, 16 minutes?
There were, like, over 10 people involved in restraining him. And, yeah, at least they say 8 minutes. The video is edited. It's been tampered with by Sequel. So times are really hard with that video. There's chunks missed out.
There's no timestamps or anything like that?
The lady who ran the surveillance cameras left Lakeside as soon as this happened and went to their data intel agency, and her sister-in-law is Heather McLogan, the nurse that's being tried with manslaughter. Right?
Yeah.
You know?
Gotcha.
What I'm saying?
Gotcha.
Yeah, because there was a nurse there present. And then when he stopped breathing, I mean, they pick him up and the kid's dead. Like it was.
Was this staff that held him down or other kids?
No, it was staff.
Okay.
No,
okay.
Yeah.
This is a state facility. It's under all the regulations.
Yep.
It's for kids and juvenile justice kids specifically. And they still, this happened. And he was like restrained. I forget if it's over 60 times in the last year, and in December for over 30 minutes unconscious. They fear, they call it hearing, they would take the big kids, restrain them unconscious in front of the whole group during lunch to let them know who's in charge and let the kids beat other kids for them. It was, we've interviewed a couple of Lakeside staff and it's pretty typical of the TTI.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's like, and the thing is too, is that kids become, some of those kids become used to those restraints because it's the only way that they can self-soothe. So they'll fucking destroy an entire fucking facility if they're that. It's like it brainwashes them that the only way that they can get out like that cortisol that from that, you know, stress response is to fucking be restrained. I mean, you could do prone restraints in residential facilities in PA until 2010 because I had just started residential when they like canceled prone restraints. But I will tell you,
cancel culture strikes again.
But I will tell you, 5 years later, I also worked in a program and they did a fucking front facing prone restraint. And I was like, you cannot do that. And me and the fucking director did not get along. And I quit within 3 months because they were pissed because I called them out on fucking doing, like, they would have a kid face down on a fucking floor. Like, that was, like, kids were dying all the fucking time with that. But, like, yeah, Cornelius, I mean, they fucked that kid up. They sat on his fucking chest.
I feel like in the age of post-George Floyd, footage like that coming out of a treatment facility would immediately go viral and immediately get this.
So, this happened April 29th of last year, right before George Floyd.
Wow.
It was all on footage. And for some reason, internet virality just did not pick up justice for Cornelius. And like I said, we got an NBC article and everything, but it's Bane, you guys. Like, they control the media. And so after our NBC article, a week later, that's when TikTok started getting traded in the U.S. And everyone who'd used the Justice for Cornelius hashtag, which was in the millions at this point, we were all immediately and permanently shadow banned. We've been shadow banned for a year. Like, I have 22,000 followers on our podcast, TikTok, and I get like 20 to 150 views per post. Why would I even post? You know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it goes fucking deep. It is like that. The last stop is just a small piece of this whole fucking.
So, listeners, if you want to feel really bad about the state of the world and how, but you know, find out that there are some things that are even worse than you thought, watch The Last Stop. Then keep watching other stuff. I guess there's a lot more to it than just that documentary. Are there any other things that you would recommend people would watch, Miranda?
Yeah, I would definitely, my favorite documentary, I don't know how, because I haven't talked to Maria since she watched it, but Fix My Kid.
Is great.
It's my favorite. It's about Straight Incorporated and Kids Incorporated, which was Mel Sembler ran it. I mean, it shows you the political connections and why these things run for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely recommend checking out Joe versus Alon online. It's a graphic novel by an Alon survivor. And then check out the podcast. And there's a bunch of books.
What's the podcast again?
Our podcast is Troubled. There's also a podcast called The Timeout Room. Mm-hmm. And there's Pieces of Victory on YouTube. And I don't know. I was going to say, Aaron Bacon, because Maria brought it up. There's a 30-minute movie that Nick Gaglia did about Aaron Bacon that is just so gorgeous on YouTube. So, I mean, if you want to start with Wilderness Therapy. And remember, she'd mentioned he died from an ulcer, but he had over, like, 61 contusions all over his body.
That's right.
Just, like, keep that in mind. He was down to 80-something pounds, like. They beat Aaron Bacon to death. Like, they did. He didn't just, like,
it wasn't just an ulcer. Yeah, I mean, it goes deep. But I think that, like, if you see shit online about it, share it. Like, share it. Because if you, you know, it's like you got to get it back in the algorithm or whatever.
We all get shadow banned, then essentially none of us are shadow banned. I think that's how that works.
On TikTok, but definitely check out Justice for Cornelius on every other app.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing some horrifying stories about your life.
This has been one of the most enlightening experiences of my life.
Also, do you have social media people can follow, or is it just for the podcast? What if somebody wants Who wants to look you up? Where can they find you?
Yeah, so the podcast social media is all Talk Troubled, because obviously Troubled isn't available. Mm-hmm. And I would definitely recommend Action Items. We do finally have a federal bill up called the Keep All Students Safe Act, CASA for short, that would ban certain kinds of restraints and isolation in public schools, all schools, because kids like Cedric Napoleon Price, kids with disabilities, are killed in restraints, even public schools today. Mm-hmm. And we've got places like the JRC that literally straps autistic kids down and electroshocks them until they go brain damaged. So Stop the Shock also is a hashtag to check out right now.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. What about you, G. Ryan? Where can people find you, follow you?
Man, I ain't got shit to plug, bro. You could find me somewhere in Pittsburgh. Follow me at G. Ryan on Twitter, G-R-Y-I-N. I don't really do anything but talk shit with Maria and Andrew.
You did give me an ice cream scoop the other day.
I did. I did.
The ice cream business is very territorial and cutthroat. And the day before I was about to go to G. Ryan's neighborhood, he sent me a video of another ice cream truck in his neighborhood. I was like, first of all, now I know whose tires I got to slash.
Right.
But second of all, I know not to go there tomorrow.
I want you to succeed.
Yeah. I think being an ice cream man is a
noble profession. And I'm honestly, like, I haven't been able to do this yet because of COVID, but when my kid has another big birthday party and, like, I can just have you pull up, you know what I mean? And just tell these kids to go ham, and then, like, I can hand you, like, a stack of cash, you know what I mean? Like, right then and there, like I'm hitting up the plug, like. Not only that, but, like, I also got to say, like, knowing the ice cream man gives you a lot of clout with your kid. So, and like, I did this the other day.
I literally have a joke about this in my stand.
I swear to God, I did this the other day. Like, no joke. And I don't know what joke you're going to tell, but you can let me know if it's on point with what I did. But, like, my kid was acting a fool. And I didn't send her to, like, straight camp. You know what I mean? I didn't send her to scare a straight camp. I was like, if you don't quit fucking around, I know the ice cream man. Like, you see me splow up the ice cream man, I will tell him not to come.
Damn, dude.
She choked.
See, sometimes that, see, and this is what I recommend.
I felt bad though, I did.
I recommend as a therapist, I do give children candy and ice cream when they're down. I stopped at Dunkin' Donuts the other day because one of my kiddos was down. You know what I mean? Sometimes you just got to do that. But you can also show up when me and Miranda start just showing up to these places and shutting them down. You could be outside with the ice cream truck.
Oh, yeah. No, I'll give you a ride.
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah. We'll drive the ice cream truck to all these facilities and be like, we're here and we're letting these fucking kids out. And they're all going to fucking eat ice cream.
And none of the staff gets ice cream.
None of the staff gets ice cream. Fuck all y'all.
Yeah. Actually, so something that we're going to start doing as a nonprofit, we could start it in your area, and we need a van for this, is doing like a happy 18th birthday, you're legally allowed to leave van that goes to locations on people's 18th birthday with the nice megaphone thing. And that way you can help us legally pick up legal people and take them to their next safe location and advertise for your business with like a live stream that people can donate through.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty dope.
Damn. That's adorable. My van is not very safe. I would not want to put anybody in
we
it.
We can use Patreon
money. The
seatbelts
are essentially just drawn onto the side of the truck.
Yeah. I got a Jeep.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll figure something out though.
Would you guys fund a new van for Andrew if it also doubles as an animal rescue transport vehicle?
Yeah.
Now this has turned into a pyramid scheme, and I like
it.
Thank you guys again so much. Listeners, thank you for listening. Holy fuck, this one's been a ride.
I know. Sorry,
I'm going to New York.
You.
I'm going to New York, so I won't be checking the... Who am I kidding? I'll be on my phone the whole time. Thank you again for listening. We'll be back next week. We love you.
We love all of you so much.
Organize your workplace.
Yes.